you've broken ground as a female founder leading a major funding round. What advice would you give to aspiring female entrepreneurs looking to make their mark in the industry?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. I don't think about being a female as much because I don't know how it is to be a male.
Right.
Because usually when you start a business, things are really messy. There's a lot of stuff to be done. There's a lot of uncertainty. I think equally, it's important to surround yourself with the right people.
Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. My next guest is Lena Hackeler. Lena is the founder and CEO of Bright Payments, a Stockholm-based fintech that utilizes the open banking framework to offer instant payments and payouts across 26 markets in Europe. Bright raised $60 million, which was one of the largest raises in 2023, led by a female founder. Everyone, give it up for Lena. Lena, so awesome to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome to have you. Lena, so how are you today?
I'm doing great. I'm in Stockholm, in our headquarters. It is January, so as is to be expected, we have a ton of snow in Sweden. It's really pretty, so doing really well.
Amazing. You got to send me some pics as you promised after the interview.
I will.
I can see this, like how you said, like there's half a meter of snow there.
I think at this point, that's probably how much it is. Yeah. It looks like somebody's shaking a snow globe.
Basically. Oh man, that's so awesome. That sounds like a fairy tale. Lena, so let's kick things off. Can you take us back to the kickoff of the Bright journey? What ignited the spark for you to set, you know, things in motion? And how did your experiences at Klarna and Qliro shape this vision?
Yeah, so you've already said it. My career in fintech started in Klarna. So I started there in 2010, quite early. And that's also to some extent where the story of Bright begins, because we made an acquisition in Klarna of a business called Sofort, which is really large in Germany, and I would say very much the original account-to-account slash open banking payment business of Europe, prior before that even became a term. So that's how I got my start in the category, and I saw sort of how that category of payments was working and what I thought the potential was. But I didn't think so much more about it because we had acquired them and they were being integrated into the Klarna world. And so it ceased to be a standalone business as such. But obviously, open banking has been on the rise for the past couple of years. And I think it is widely predicted to be one of the fastest growing payment categories across Europe, much thanks to the legislation behind it, PSD2, Payment Service Directive 2, and now actually PSD3. So I spent quite some time working with them and their brand, which is massive in Germany. So it's very much a consumer branded payment option.
Yeah.
But sort of stopped thinking about it after I left Klarna after 7 years. And then, as you already said, went over to Qliro Financial Services, which is another BNPL player here in Europe and very much focused on the Nordics.
Yeah.
And in Qliro, I saw another type of player in that segment, and I started to compare the different account-to-account payment models and felt that there was room in the market to build a pan-European instant bank payment provider that had a strong focus on the consumers, such as we did at Sofort, but focused much more on the instant processing of the payments, so not just using open banking but instant payments. And that's how Bright was born.
Amazing. I love the story. So Bright has recently raised $60 million in funding, if I'm not mistaken. And that round was one of the largest funding rounds led by a female founder in 2023. How did you navigate the fundraising journey, especially considering the economic uncertainties?
Yeah, so that was, it was interesting because basically what we saw in 2022, I started the business in 2019, we launched in 2020, so we were very much in building mode. Mm-hmm. And in 2022, we started realizing that, okay, the market for fundraising is pretty tough.
Yeah.
We were getting a lot of investor outreach, but it was pretty clear that a lot of investors were just looking to scan the market, understand the business models, get to know the team, not really looking to deploy money.
Mm-hmm.
So on the back of that, when we sort of realized that, what we decided to do was actually focused on not burning cash. I usually say profitability, but it really wasn't profit that we're after. We just wanted to make sure that we would be able to control our own fate and not burn any cash anymore. And as a result of that, in the end of 2022, we did post a small profit. So we effectively stopped burning cash altogether. So then in 2023, all of a sudden, what happened is that the market picked up again. And we were somewhat coincidentally became, I think, a really interesting target for a lot of funds. So we had a lot of investors reaching out to us, a very luxurious situation.
Yeah.
And yeah, we're able to choose the funds that we really wanted to work with, which was, of course, I mean, great outcome for us. So that's how it started. So I can't really say that it was, you know, a terrible process and it was extremely difficult, because it really wasn't the case for us. But I think that's a consequence of sort of the market and the sequence of how we decided to build the business.
Lena, you've broken ground as a female founder leading a major funding round. What advice would you give to aspiring female entrepreneurs looking to make their mark in the industry?
Oh, wow, that's a good question. I don't think about being a female as much because I don't know how it is to be a male.
Right.
But what I will say is, I think if I look at my my career leading up to starting the business, which I did relatively late compared to others, right?
Yeah.
I would say that what was most beneficial prior to doing that was having managers that were really supportive of me and my growth. I worked for the founder of Klarna for a really long time. He was one of those people. And I think that really gave me a really broad experience that I was able to draw on when I started my own company. So I think that's one thing. Basically, gather relevant experience, make sure that you work for people that will give you access to that, that will support you and let you grow.
Yeah.
And then once you do get started, I think equally it's important to surround yourself with the right people. So what I did is I hired a combination of new fintech talent, but also a lot of people I had worked with in the past that I already knew, which made it easy. Because usually when you start a business, things are really messy. There's a lot of stuff to be done. There's a lot of uncertainty. So having a few people around you that you know already in terms of sort of how they work, they know you, and you can communicate, that was really helpful for me.
Amazing. You mentioned, like before, you just said that you had this situation where actually you had a lot of investors reaching out to you, which was great. And so my question here would be, building strong relationships with investors, you know, is crucial. Could you delve into what you believe sets apart a successful investor-founder relationship and how this synergy has played a role in your journey?
I would say it very much depends on the stage that you're in. So I have, for me at Bright, we have one funding investor that's been with us since the first day, literally since before we even became a business. We were discussing the idea of building Bright, and then we got the funding on the back of that. And I think their trust plays a crucial role, because especially in the early days, like, nothing usually goes as you expect it to go. And I think it's important that you have somebody that sort of is prepared for that kind of journey and trusts sort of that you will eventually get to the finish line. So that's been really important. Also getting somebody that understands the industry. That's one thing, by the way, that I think is really, really important. That's also one thing that we considered when we now chose the funds that we're going to do this round with. We currently, maybe for background, we have Dawn Capital, which is a UK-based fund that was a previous investor in Tink, which is also, of course, a large open banking play in Europe. And we have Headline, their French office. And both of these funds, I think, have a very good view on the industry. So that was really helpful for us. And I think that also helps aligning expectations. So, and ultimately, I think to me personally, at least, it boils down to the people. Because those are we're going to have them on the board, going to be speaking to them a lot. Yeah. I speak to one of our investors more or less on a daily basis. Not always the same person, but one of them on a daily basis. So I think you want to make sure that it's people that you can work with on a personal level as well, because it does matter.
100%. Lena, what's every successful startup superpower?
Oh, every successful startup superpower. I would say ability to adapt, being resilient, I think. Both as a team and as a person. I think those are important factors. I would say, I think if you freak out easily, it's not easy to be a founder. and then just sort of, you know, acknowledging that things will not always go in a straight line. Because it's not there for everybody. Like, I haven't met anyone literally who says that everything went as they thought it was going to go and it was always easy. Never. Yeah. So be prepared for that.
Yeah, I think one of the successful startup superpowers is definitely a team. And so actually, I want to ask you, what's the secret sauce in building a team that not only works well together, but also brings out the best in each other?
So I'm going to have a quite, cliche answer perhaps, but sort of the longer I work, the more I feel it boils down to bringing in good people, people that you see eye to eye with in terms of your values, integrity, level of ambition, and people that are just good individuals. Because then if things change or you need to adapt or, you know, there is a lack of alignment of expectations, ultimately, you'll talk about it and you'll figure it out. And that's, I feel like the vast majority of people working directly with me in this business are like that. So that makes the communication quite easy. So that would be, for me personally, that would be.
And then great people attract great people, right? So if you...
Yes.
The more great people you manage to hire, the more great people want to work for you as well.
100%.
So Lena, Bride operates in 26 markets across Europe. How do you approach tailoring your solution to, you know, to meet the diverse needs and preferences of customers in different regions?
Maybe for background, we do have sort of two separate legs of our offering. One is instant payments and one is instant payouts. And it's the payouts that we do all across Europe.
Yeah.
And I would say that sort of the adaptation to the local consumer preference is somewhat mandated by the category that we're in the sense that open banking already provides a standard as to how the process works in every single market. Where I would say there is more complexity for us in terms of adaptation to local needs and preferences is on the B2B side of things, because we're a B2B2C business model. So we offer our payment solutions to merchants first, who then in turn offer them to consumers. And that's actually quite complex. I would say it's one of the most difficult things of building a payment business is ensuring that your solution resonates with a local market and you understand sort of challenges that are unique to each and every market. And the way to go about it, I think, is finding good people that know these markets and that will be on the ground getting the info and bringing it back to headquarters. But it's one of the trickiest things, of, I think, personally, of scaling a payment business.
Awesome. Lena, so let's play fintech lingo game. Fintech lingo can be a maze for the uninitiated. So you already mentioned some of the terms and what you guys are doing. But so, you know, we have like pay by bank or A2A. It's like, you know, decoding a secret language for some. How do you make sure your innovations speak not just to the industry insiders, but also resonate with folks, you know, who might not know the difference between API and ATM?
Yeah, good question. And you're perfectly right. And it's even more complex because we use these terms interchangeably, right? I mean, even I do. I'll say instant payments, I'll say open banking, I'll say account to account.
Yeah.
And while they have different nuances, they're all sort of cater often to the same message. I think the short answer is that we try to adapt our communication to the target group, for example. So when you say pay by bank, that is a term that works both for consumers and for merchants, but I would say primarily for consumers, whereas, for example, account to account or A2A, nobody will understand what that is, essentially. I mean, they'll say, will mean nothing to a consumer. And what I foresee is, and we've seen this in other payment categories, is that eventually, as the category grows, we will settle on one specific term. If you look at the segment BNPL, buy now, pay later, in Klarna, we never used that term in the early years. We never said we are a BNPL play. That was not until much later, until that crystallized, and I foresee that's going to happen. So I think things will get easier over time. And in the meantime, we just have to try to be pedagogic and adapt to whoever the recipient is of the communication.
So, Lena, I know that you've got some marketing magic up your sleeve. Share some tricks. How do you make fintech sound not just innovative, but, you know, downright irresistible to the average person?
That's a good question, actually. I mean, fintech in itself, I would say, is not a term that the average person is even familiar with or thinks about, right? I mean, you think of, like, when you consume fintech, you'll think about a specific product. You'll think about a banking app or a payment provider or a trading platform. So that's, again, I think it's sort of about appealing to the target group and having clear communication around the benefits. That's quite key. Usually, I would say, coming from the payment space, it's very much about the convenience, the security, ease of use overall, that are core to the communication. Then I'm personally, and you gave it away, my background is in marketing, that's what I did in Klarna for many years.
Yeah.
I personally believe that much of it is also about communicating in basically the right setting. For a payment business, that means actually communicating on the merchant's website, because that's where a consumer will encounter the payment method. So it's less about sort of, at least in the early days, about big brand campaigns that are catered to consumers, but more about communicating in the relevant context, and then by that, making it more intuitive.
Awesome, Lena. And do you have any people that actually inspire you or you like to follow when it comes to marketing, or you like learn a lot from, like any mentors in the life, or like generally?
Oh, good question. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not one of those people that sort of is a fan of, you know, one specific person that they follow religiously. Like, you know, like some people are really fascinated by people like Steve Jobs. That's not me. I am quite in touch with a lot of people that I've interfaced with in my career. And I think what's helpful about that is that they know me. So when I discuss certain challenges with them, they'll be able to see it in my context. Yeah. The other thing is, I mean, of course, I speak to a lot of other founders all the time. And my key takeaway is very often that everyone has the same problems. One way or another, everybody has the same challenges. And I think that can be really rewarding. If you hear sort of from others and they say sort of in some shape or form, it's very similar challenges all across. So you're not that alone, which often is a feeling that you have when you start a business. It can be quite lonely in that sense. So from that point of view, that definitely helps.
All right. Let's put our fintech crystal ball glasses on. What do you think, what do you envision for Bright and the fintech space in the next decade? And, you know, any emerging technologies or shifts that you anticipate will shape the industry?
Mm-hmm. An overarching theme that I see, I'm not going to say AI, because I think everyone's talking about that. But I think for fintech more specifically, the red thread, I think, is actually the instantness of the way that we interact and that we transact. And with that, I don't just mean obviously our own business and payments.
Yeah.
But what you see is across the world, there's a shift towards instant processing all across. Mm-hmm. Not just in Europe, I mean, same in India, you have Brazil, even in the States, there's progress. And I think it's going to impact the way that consumers consume services, quite simply. Also instant access to data, for example, also falls into that category for me. And I think it's going to shape the way that people expect to be catered to and to be sort of offered services. And that, I think, will change and impact a lot of fintech business models as well.
Awesome. Lena, to finish it off, how do you unwind? Like any guilty pleasures, hobbies, or rituals that keep you grounded and bring a smile to your face? And do you have a favorite song that gets you pumped up for a day of fintech adventures?
I listen to a lot of music all the time, in all fairness. I'm a huge user of Spotify. I don't have a particular song, but it's usually going to be something pretty fast and upbeat. Not so much, you know, I'm not so big on the like sad and sort of slow, mellow music. But that is because I'm generally quite a high energy person, and I like things to move fast and I'm on the go a lot. So that's perhaps not a guilty pleasure, but what the team here at Bright will say is candy.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm really like, that's my biggest weakness is candy, and we regularly serve it to the office, and there's like a little stack that the team keeps just for me, and they're all laughing about me because I pass it several times a day. So that's certainly a guilty pleasure everybody's aware of. In terms of, if I wouldn't say it when you ask me, they're going to listen to this and they're going to tell me, oh my God, how could you not have mentioned your extreme weakness for candy? No, but other than that, ritual. So I usually start my day really early, but I usually do an hour at least from home. Or I just, you know, stop by on the way to work at a cafe that I like, and I work quietly for an hour because I usually don't get to do that during the day. The team's been growing quite a bit, so we're around 120 people right now. which is not huge by any measure, but it's significantly larger than we were just a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And that means that usually the days are pretty packed. So like I'll take an hour early mornings to just sort of make a plan and sort my own thoughts and answer a couple of emails. And that's something that I've done now for a while. It really works well for me. And it's become a ritual more than anything else, really.
Awesome. Lena, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and telling us all about Bride and yourself. I know that you got a flight to catch. I could actually talk with you for another hour. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much. And take care, safe flights, and all the best with your endeavors.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great fun.